Follow the Hughes flight with the National Broadcasting Company for latest news. Information, please. Wake up, Mr. and Mrs. America. Time to stump the expert. You want to try your hand at this quiz game that has the whole country on its mental toes? Send us questions and the correct answers. If acceptable to our editors, they will be presented to a board of experts for the first time during each broadcast. Any question accepted will win $2 for the person who submits it. Any question the experts cannot answer will win an extra $5. The contest will be refereed by our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Clifton Fadiman.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. We're very sorry that Mr. Franklin C. Adams can't be here with us this evening. He's recovering very nicely indeed from an operation. But John Curran, sports columnist of the New York Times, is here, willing to answer for himself and for Mr. Adams, too, if I don't stop him. Mr. Curran is going to be backed up on the science end of things by Mr. Bernard Jaffe, author of Crucibles and Outposts of Science. And tonight, folks, we have two distinguished guests of honor. Count them. Two. One, two. Both looking more confident than they're apt to feel in a few minutes. Mr. Quincy Howe, well-known editor, journalist, and author of England Expects Every American to Do His Duty, is supposed to know all and tell all about foreign affairs, domestic affairs, and, just affairs. Finally, we're proud to have with us tonight the man who describes the narrow world of Broadway like a philosopher. Phrase copyright. A man associated with innumerable theatrical hits, incredible theatrical runs, and remarkably few theatrical errors. George S. Kaufman. That's a nice build-up, ain't it, Kaufman?
Much better.
Now, folks, remember that these four experts are as innocent as the babe unborn, or the driven snow. Choose one out of two. All these questions are new to them. The program is unrehearsed and will probably sound like it. The question is addressed to the entire board. Any member wishes to may raise his hand and take a try at it. It must be answered by one member, except where it's composed of more than two parts, in which case the board may cooperate. But if any part is answered incorrectly, $5 is forfeited. When you hear that cash register sound, that means $5 is actually being paid out to the lucky question. Something seems to be happening to Mr. Curran. Well, folks, that sound you hear, that's just Mr. Curran's thought wave. Hold it, Mr. Curran, hold it. All right, we're off. The first question is a four-part question, and gentlemen, you have to answer three out of four. This comes to Mr. Roland Williams, 1124 Thornton, Plainfield, New Jersey. First, where was the Hushabye baby's cradle? Mr. Kirk.
On the treetop.
Pretty good. Two, how did the garden of Mistress Mary, quite contrary, grow? Mr. Kirk.
On a row.
Yes. How about giving us a little more on that?
Mary, quite contrary, how does the garden grow? Silver bells and cockle shells, all set out in a row.
No, matter of fact, that's not entirely true. You seem to be more modest than necessary. It's and maidens all in a row. Maybe you forgot about the maidens, Mr. Kirk. Forgot about the maidens.
I'm getting on.
Three. Who were the three men in a tub? Who were the three men in a tub? Folks, I'm getting a flash of brilliant silence here.
I think it's us.
That was Mr. Kaufman. Three men in a tub. Don't count yourself, Mr. Kaufman. Mr. Howe, foreign relations expert. Three men in a tub.
It wouldn't be winking, blinking, and nod.
No, it wouldn't, though there were three. Rub-a-dub-dub, three men in a tub. And who do you think they be? The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. Turn them out, knaves, all three. Don't you remember that? Well, that's one wrong out of four. Now the next is the crucial one. Why wouldn't they waken little boy blue? Now you have to think for a long while about that one.
How long is the program? Half an hour?
Half an hour, Mr. Kaufman, half an hour. And no extras.
Do you have to give the answer in the metrical words of the field?
No, not entirely.
You mean you want to know that it was the...
I want to know the reason.
The late boy?
The what boy?
The defunct boy.
The defunct boy?
Yeah.
Little boy, you mean little boy blue is defunct?
Oh, no.
It hadn't told him.
Because he was asleep under the haystack.
Yeah, he was, but that's not exactly why they wouldn't wake him. He was asleep. But you know, people who are asleep are waking. Unless there's some reason for it.
Well, he's not doing fast asleep. He's under the haystack fast asleep.
Oh, don't be sentimental. No, there's a definite reason. There's a definite reason.
Well, he had been up late the night before with the chief.
Mr. Kaufman is making up plays on the radio. Nope. Little boy blue, come blow your horn. The sheep's in the meadow, the cow's in the corner. You're listening, gentlemen. Where's the little boy that looks after the sheep? He's under the haycock, fast asleep. Will you wake him? No, not I. For if I do, he'll be sure to cry. That's the reason. He'll be sure to cry. Well, two wrong out of four. Sorry. That's going to cost us $5. Here's one, a more or less scientific question from Mr. H.B. Irwin, 2122 Locust Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. What relation do first, milk, and second, spruce trees have to wearing apparel? Now, keep out of this, Mr. Kieran, will you? Mr. Jeff.
I got my eye, Kieran. I want them to take that one.
That's right. Now, you tuck it under your belt.
Spruce is used for making rayon.
Yes, that's what we mean.
And milk is used to make buttons out of casing.
What is this, milk?
Yes.
Used to make buttons out of casing. You know, that may be perfectly true.
I think it is right.
I'm going to let buttons get by. I have wool that milk from the cow can be chemically changed into a form of wool. Would that be right?
That's correct, also.
That's right. Must make the cow feel off the sheep. Now, we'll let that go unless we're proved wrong at the end of the hour. I think you can make buttons out of milk. I've never done it, but I think it can be done. The next one is from Mr. Harry Freed of Chicago, Illinois. Name a play in which each of the following objects is associated. Now, I'm going to name eight objects, and you have to get five out of the eight among the four of them. They're all leaning forward now in a state of extreme tenseness and anxiety. Here we go. One, a lady's handkerchief. Raise your hands, gentlemen. Ladies, thank you. Mr. Kaufman, you know that.
I think there's something I should have told you before we started, Mr. Kaufman.
Go ahead. Tell it to me now.
I don't know anything.
Go away.
Sorry, but nobody asked me.
What are you an expert on? Ignorance?
That's all.
Expert on ignorance. You don't know what famous play involves the ladies' handkerchief.
Well, ladies' handkerchiefs have been in every play.
Well, name every play. Go ahead.
Anything. Wait there while I go home for a book I've done.
No, you've got to get the play. Got to get the play.
My lady's handkerchief.
Is that a play?
I think so.
I won't let it go unless I'm proved. See if I can get any other volunteers. Let me have that.
A handkerchief fixture house. Prominently and on trial of James Howell long ago was part of the play, or whether it was simply a stage property.
I'll let that go until I'm proved wrong, but I'm...
Othello,
why, yes, he knew that all along. The stuff is hung out in his inside pocket. Right, let that go. Four dead men. I assume I call them objects. Four dead men.
A spike to the murder.
That's right. This is Mr. Kaufman coming to bat now. A tinny Victrola. Mr. Kaufman, come on, a tinny Victrola.
That's not very good advertising for the Victrola.
No. Don't try to get me off the track. Attorney Victrola. Mr. Howe.
Rain
is correct.
The word out of my mouth.
Now, Mr. Kaufman, let's see whether you can get this one. Indian nuts. He won't answer. Can you let us out of Mr. Kieran?
Yes, his own play, but I forgot the name of it.
Oh, do these boys like each other? They're crazy to give each other free advertising. Yes, his own play. Once in a lifetime, wasn't it? That's right. All right. The next one's hard. Now we've gotten four so far. A trumpet.
The Green Pastures.
Green Pastures. Six. A little red book.
A little red book.
Yeah. Mr. Kaufman, it's better to be right than to be hesitant, if I can paraphrase the title of one.
Well, you know, it may have been some time ago. I'm not as old as I look, Mr. Fadiman. I'm going to be 12 in October.
Any volunteers up there? You come back 12 years from now, we'll try you again. How about it, Mr. Kieran?
I take a guess. I'd rather be right.
No, I don't think.
Well,
you're wrong.
Know.
I'd rather be right. A little red book comes from Three Men and a Horse. Remember it? Sure, we all remember that. Next, a quip. A quip. It's a tricky one.
Uncle Tom's cat.
That's right, Mr. Kieran. And last, a hurdy-gurdy.
The easiest way.
Is there one in the easiest
way? Oh, it's played Bon Bon Buddy the Chocolate.
No, are you not kidding me?
No? Not kidding.
I believe everything you
tell. Look it up at the final curtain.
Whenever I don't look at your face, I believe everything you tell. yes, I suppose that's right. Winter set, of course, had a hurdy-gurdy, too. Well, they got six, I think, out of eight. You can get by on that. So, Mr. John Bonsall of Cleveland. Now, I wonder whether you ought to throw this into your lap, Mr. Howe. Mr. Howe has written a book, you know, folks, which defines English foreign policy as the expectation that every American will do his duty. Nice, simple foreign policy. Here are some questions about our own foreign policy. Under what president was each of the following adopted as part of the United States foreign policy? And there are five of them, and you have to get four out of five with the help of your colleagues.
Need a lot of help.
All right. First, the open door.
The open door was originated when Hay was Secretary of State and when McKinley was in the White House.
That's correct. No entangling alliances.
No entangling alliances was pronounced by George Washington in his farewell address. I believe he was president at the time he delivered the address.
That's correct. Three, good neighbor.
Good neighbor. Under the presidency of Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Nice work. Watchful waiting.
Watchful waiting under the presidency of Woodrow Wilson.
Correct. And finally, dollar diplomacy.
Well, that's been with us since the beginning, but I suppose you would say that came to its height under President Coolidge.
No tap, but you did get 4 out of 5. Mr. Kaufman, do you consider yourself an authority both on the stage and women, or just on the stage, or just on women?
On general ignorance. General ignorance.
All right, General.
All branches of ignorance.
This one comes from Mrs. Morse, D. Morse, 20 King Street, Worcester, Massachusetts. Who was Shakespeare's favorite actor? Who was Shakespeare's favorite actor? Now, don't answer unless you know.
Well, I'll give you an absolutely correct answer. I don't know.
So far, that's good. However, I don't think we could get by on that. Does anyone else volunteer on that? All right, that's going to cost us $5. Well, the answer is that Shakespeare never saw an actress. All roles were played by men and boys until many years after his death. That's pretty clever, folks, isn't it? Next one, from Miss Alla Evalenko, 12 West 69th Street, New York. Name four works of fiction whose titles suggest subjects connected with youth. Let's all get on this one. Four works of fiction. Volunteers. The title suggests subjects connected with music. And don't tell me I'm Dante's Inferno, either. I didn't get much.
Allegro.
I beg pardon?
Allegro.
Allegro, who wrote it?
That I don't know, but
it's not a work of fiction.
It's a book from
Milton. Yes, but it's a poem, I think, rather than a work of fiction. Well, I don't think I'll accept
that.
Can
be both.
I beg pardon?
Can be both.
Yeah, not on this program. Four works of fiction. All right, I'll change it. Make it four works of fiction or poetry. Let's help the boys along. Allegro's okay. Three more.
Would you let us have that again?
Yep. Name four works of fiction or poetry whose titles suggest subjects connected with music.
The Bar Sinister.
The Bar Sinister, yes, I'll accept that. That's perfectly correct. Perfectly correct. That's two. A sinister, of course, is a well-known three-string musical instrument. Played in the Malay Peninsula.
How about the story of the three bears? How many bears?
The story of the three bears. How is that connected with music? How is that title connected with music? No, I don't see that. I think that's the answer to another question, Mr. Gaffney. Wrong? Yeah. Well, let's pass. I don't let it. Can any of you...
Evil Lit, Tragic Symphony?
Well, Savage. All right, let that go. That's three. One more.
Nocturne by Quinnerton.
Perfectly good. And, of course, those little nursery rhymes of Symbol Frank. The next one comes from Mr. Joseph T. Rucker, Jr. of 500 Rivera Street, San Francisco, California. Why was it necessary for the Byrd Antarctic Expedition to take along the refrigerator? I really ought to give that to Mr. Tierney because he's the Byrd expert here, but I think I'll throw that Mr. Jaffe's way. Why was it necessary for the Byrd Antarctic Expedition to take along the refrigerator? Anybody know?
Wanted to keep things warm down there.
Wanted to keep things warm down there. As a matter of fact, you're fairly warm. Mr. Jaffe, can you give us the correct answer with a hint from Mr. Kieran?
My answer is practically the same as Mr. Kieran's.
Well, then keep quiet. Want to enlarge on Mr. Kieran a little?
Well, except that Clayton's tools deteriorate at very low temperatures.
Yeah.
As the temperature of the refrigerator can be controlled above the temperature of the outside.
That's right.
Except that some of the vitamins are destroyed at very low temperatures.
Yeah. In other words, it's warmer inside the refrigerator than it is outdoors. That is the correct answer. The gentleman who sends this in, Mr. Rucker, says that his father was in the Byrd Antarctic Expedition, and he knows that that's what they did use. He used the refrigerator for keeping meat and other foods from freezing. Don't know what those foods were. I suppose things like cold cuts. Cold floor, maybe. Pass that by. We've lost $10 so far. I'll see if I can't get them up to $25. Plus a discount. This one comes from Mr. Robert Kaltenborn of Brownstown Road, Larimer, Pennsylvania. Identify five of the following. And there are six words. I'll read them quickly. Ta-ta, da-da, ja-da, ka-ka, ma-ha, oom-pa. Begin with the first. Ta-ta. Mr. Howe.
That's the name of a large steelworks in India.
Go on.
Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong.
Now, Mr. Howell, you're not fooling, are you?
Wouldn't do that for the world.
There really is a steelworks?
No, it's true. The Sackett Bauer family, I believe, were the controlling interest.
In the Tata steel?
That's right. Call up the British consul.
Goodness gracious me. All right, got it right. It also means bye-bye or goodbye. Ta-ta. However, I'll allow steelworks. Dada. D-A-D-A. Dada. Volunteer.
Wasn't that a school of painting?
Yes. School of painting, literature, poetry. An eccentric school. Dada. Mr. Carlton, you will let us have Dada.
No, Dada, I don't know.
Don't know Jada? Mr. Howe, the foreign relations expert.
Jada, Jada, jing, jing, jing.
Very good, foreign relations expert. Very good. Next one is Ta-Ka.
How is it spelled?
Ta-Ka is spelled K-A-K-A.
Mr. Tatum, I think that's a disease.
No, it is not. Not yet, as far as I know. Mr. Jaffe, no, Ta-Ka is not a disease. Got three so far. You really ought to know that one, Mr. Kieran.
Not the cry of a crow misspelled, is it?
It might be. We'll allow it. It's a New Zealand parrot.
A New Zealand parrot. Everybody knows that.
The next, Maha. Maha. M-A, space, pause, ha. H-A. Maha. Don't know. A baboon. Everybody knows a Maha's a baboon. And finally, Oompa.
Oompa.
Mr. Kieran. I'll hand that one over to Mr. Kieran. He's making motions.
Well, the Oompa is the sound that's supposed to come out of a slide trombone.
Yes, or a tuba. Well, we got only four out of the six. We should have gotten five. That's going to cost us $5. Going to Mr. Calhoun, Larimer, Pennsylvania. The next one is from Mr. Lewis Martin, 4731 California Street, San Francisco. What baseball players engaged in the following bonehead play? There are three bonehead plays. A, the famous Eddie Collins foot race. How about that, Mr. Kieran?
Ernie Zimmerman.
Yep.
Chased him over the plate with the winning run in the World Series.
There he goes. I can't catch him, folks. He's going to keep on with that story. The World Series steal of third base with a runner already stationed there, Mr. Sheeran.
Uh-oh.
Oh, we may catch Mr. Sheeran.
The World Series.
The World Series steal of third base with a runner already stationed there.
Must have been a Brooklyn team, Mr. Sheeran.
That was Mr. Howell, who comes from Boston.
Do I have to get 3 out of 3 on this?
You have to get 3 out of 3, yep.
Looks like a $5 question to me. What's the next one?
Well, you can't get me away from the second one. I'll give you the next one, then I'll come back to the World Series steal. The third one is a celebrated failure to touch second base to toss a club at series chance.
Even an amateur knows that.
You know that, Mr. Carlson?
That was Fred Merkel.
That was correct. And the second one is Red Faber. I'm afraid that's going to cost us $5 off.
You admit that it's Mr. Red Faber, Mr. Kieran? If it is, it's news to me. I'll go back and look it up.
All right, you go back and look it up. Come back when you've looked it up. The next one is from Mr. Ruth Harper, 26 Rosedale Court, Detroit, Michigan. Oh, this is tough. This is really tough. I'm sorry for the boys. I'm awfully sorry for them. Recite the first verse of a poem of which this is the last verse. And you, each gentle animal, to you for life may bind and make it follow at your call if you are always kind. That's rather pretty. What's the first verse? That's the last verse. You know it, Mr. Howe?
Unless somebody else will take a try, I will. Maybe someone else has an inspiration.
I think I have an inspiration. If so, check it at the door. We don't allow it here. Now, Mr. Howe, all right, let me try it.
Mary had a little lamb that sleeps as white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
That's correct. That's correct. The next one is from George Rufus Johnson of Birmingham, Alabama. Do the following nothing mean something to you? Associate 3 out of 4 of them with the play, the author, or the person. One, you ain't heard nothing yet. Mr. Calvin.
You ain't heard nothing yet. Does that mean it was in dialect?
That's my dialect. That's my dialect. Have you associated with any particular person?
I would say Bert Williams with no assurance that I'm right.
No assurance that you're right, with every assurance that you're wrong. No, that's quite wrong. That's going to cost us $5 unless everybody of the other three had gotten correct. It's Al Jolson. Everybody knew that, I think.
I had the color.
Yes, you had the color. Two. You got nothing, I got nothing, you both got nothing, then we'll form a trust.
Sounds like San Bernard.
No, I wish you wouldn't come to that so often, Mr. Carlson. Very nice fellow, but how about it? How about it? No, San Bernard's wrong. Yeah, Weber and Fields is correct. That was a science expert. Too wrong. I got plenty of nothing. I got plenty of nothing. Mr. Carlson?
Four
games. That's right. And the last one, I ain't never done nothing to nobody. I ain't never got nothing from nobody no time. And until I get something from somebody sometime, I don't intend to do nothing for nobody no time. Mr. Kieran.
Bert Williams.
Bert Williams is correct, but that's going to cost us, I'm afraid, $5 for a half hour and one. They did a little something with nothing, but not much. The next one is from Miss Vern Adams, or possibly Mr. Vern Adams, of 1105 Vance, Memphis, Tennessee. Is it possible for an airplane to go backwards? Is it possible for an airplane to go backwards? Mr. Jackson.
Yes, it's possible. If the wind was going 60 miles an hour and the airplane was going 40,
yes, that's correct. Well, would you say, then, that an airplane can go into reverse?
Well, that isn't going in reverse, really. It's going forward, but relatively, it's going backwards.
That's correct. Can it go into reverse? Is there a reverse
I don't
speed?
Think so.
No, there is. There's not. It must first come to a dead stop in the first place, then it would fall. That's correct. The next one is from Anna Schick, 940 St. Nicholas Avenue of New York City. What have the following plays in common? This isn't so easy. Paths of Glory by Sidney Howard. Night Over Taos by Maxwell Anderson. Marco's Millions by Eugene O'Neill, For Services Rendered by Somerset Maugham, and The Deep Tangled Wildwood by our distinguished guest, Mr. Kaufman, and Mr. Mark Connolly, who was our distinguished guest 3 or 4 weeks ago. What have those plays in common? If you don't get this, Mr. Kaufman, I don't think anybody would blame you.
box offices.
Mr. Curran.
Would you read them again, Mr.
Yes. Paths of Glory, Night Over Towels, Marco's Million, For Services Rendered by Somerset Maugham, and The Deep Tangled Wildwood, which I need not recall to you, Mr. Carlson. Very nice play it was. Plus. What have they in common? Well, I didn't expect you to get it. First place, they're all by outstandingly successful playwrights. Is that not true, Mr. Carlson? And in the second place, they were all flops. All right. I told you I'd get them out to $25. See if we can get them down to $30. This one's from Miss Edith Walton, 202 South Ellis Street, Salisbury, North Carolina. Give three instances in fact or fiction in which an apple played a memorable part. Three instances in fact or fiction in which an apple played a memorable part. Miss Curran.
The apple that caused the Trojan War.
Yes, that's correct. Paris. The Paris and the Golden Apple, that's one.
And the... The golden apples that were dropped in the time that Atalanta ran her future husband, the foot race.
That's correct. That's two. One more apple.
And the apple that Snow White ate.
That's correct.
Play.
Three would be sufficient. The Garden of Eden, of course. Here are a group of questions based on Shakespeare's plays. I think we all ought to be able to get into this. There are five of them. Answer four. Which Shakespearean character posted his love letters on trees? This question comes from Mrs. M.C. Chalmers at 48 West 8th Street, New York City. Which Shakespearean character posted his love letters on trees? Volunteers. Miss Chair.
Orlando.
In what play?
Ask the next part and I'll come back.
It doesn't matter. Orlando is correct. Which one crashed a party with exciting consequences? Go a little faster on this one. I haven't got much time.
What is it?
Which one?
Lover, was it?
Which one crashed the party with exciting consequences? No, it's Romeo. You remember in a play called Romeo and Juliet by W. Shakespeare. Which one wooed a queen in asinine fashion? Let's have it quickly.
Bottom's
correct. Which one was happily married to the most hard-boiled of women? Or at least married to the most hard-boiled of women? Possibly happily.
Petruchio.
No, that's not correct. That's what I said when I saw this
question.
Macbeth is correct. Which one wins his bride by making a good guess?
In the Merchant of Venice.
Yes, what was his name, you know?
Yes, Antonio.
No, it was Bassanio. I'm afraid, therefore, that Joni cost us $5. You got about 3¾ out of 5 on that one. And that's the last one for tonight. Thank you very much. Let's see. We've lost how much? $30. Thank you all, members of the board, and all the folks that have submitted questions. And now, Mr. Cross, our announcer has a word for you about next week's contest. Good night, everybody, and come again.